Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, my name is Leyte Sue. I'm your host here on Leyte's World of Mouth, because good stuff comes from word of mouth, and we're here doing good stuff on Heritage Radio Network, heritageradio.org. So, first off, wanted to give you a little bit of what's top of tummy for me this week. I've been obsessed with these espresso juleps from Toby's Estate Coffee in Williamsburg. They're the perfect summer drink. I'm having one right now. Simple syrup that's been infused with basil and mint and topped off with espresso and some lightly foamed milk. I'm having one every single day. It's becoming a little bit of a problem. Check it out. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about our digital legacy. So Gary Vaynerchuk, wine entrepreneur and social media innovator, he talks about, you know, the fact that our grandmothers and grandfathers, our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents never got a chance to record their every single step and bite and thought and gripe, hundreds of years ago. And imagine if that were the case, that they'd be, you know, on the Oregon Trail and they'd be tweeting, you know, food porn of the bison that they just killed, and ooh, look at this, it's on the spit, it's so delicious, or oh my gosh, like today sucks, I'm having just salt pork and crackers because we're starving, and oh my gosh, you know, my beau just picked me up in his horse and buggy, you know. And it's not even so much of the mundane stuff, but really some of the day-to-day, our beliefs, what we think about what's happening in the news every day. It's something to think about. It's something to think about when you write your next tweet or you, create your next Facebook post. Like, what are our kids going to think of us? Because they can access our highs and lows and all of the little things that we do every day. So thanks, Gary V, for that thought. Next week, I am really looking forward to going to Kiyo, Mark Forgione's new restaurant with Chef Fett. It's close to my heart. I'm a little bit of an Asian kid still. I love noodles and spices and umami. I love soups and stews. And, you know, the early word here is that, a restaurateur friend said to me that it's actually transcendental. It's the best Asian food I've ever had in New York City. Tune in next time. I'll give you the full report. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm Leyte Sue here talking on heritageradio.org. My Twitter handle is at Leyte, LEITIHSU. And by the way, something else I'm really excited about is that I got a friend at Twitter that's going to give me back my own name on Twitter. That's at L-E-I-T-I. Because some random dude who has zero tweets so far has my name. And you would think that with my name that I could be Madonna. I could just have my own name because it's been mispronounced and misspelled my entire life. Made fun of, you know, haha, Lady and the Tramp, etc. But I'm going to get that back from the random Nordic dude whose name is like Leyte Gunther or something. And I'm, you know, stay tuned for that. I'm very excited. So we're going to cut to a quick break now. Next up is where I bring on people we like, people I like. And we have Paul LeBrant, chef at the brand new The Elm. He's going to give us an update. He's moving on to new projects. Stay tuned.
Thank you. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Okay. We are on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Leyte Hsu. I eat and I drink and I connect with people who are doing all that's most delicious. And today on People We Like, we have Paul LeBrant. He's going to kill me for mispronouncing his name. Englishman, chef of the brand new The Elm. He's moved on from Cortone, so this is kind of a really exciting time to be catching up with him. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Okay, so first of all, congrats on the new spot. It's right across the street from me, from my apartment. How do you feel?
Great. New restaurant.
New projects.
New people. Yeah, very good.
And what's been, you know, you've been open for like a couple weeks now?
4 weeks now, yeah.
What's been the reception so far in the neighborhood and beyond the neighborhood?
So far, so good. I feel that we're being well received. You can tell me you are a local. it's been great. You know, we're doing something that I hope the local Williamsburgians will enjoy and keep coming back to.
Well, I have to say that I'm a tiny bit biased. I will also say that from having eaten your food at both Cortone and The Elm, something that I'm a sucker for is fine dining that actually is not just intellectual, but viscerally satisfying. And I will tell you, I will confess that I've been there more than once this week, and not just because, you know, I was meeting with you, but just that it's a place that I want to hang out. It's a place that I want to, you know, I used to work at a wine bar nearby Cortone, and there was just sort of no reason for me to go sit at the bar and hang out just because most people were there to do a rather more serious thing. What do you think that The Elm, you know, the role that The Elm plays in sort of the dining of today? You know, I was on the radio a couple weeks ago talking about hipster dining and sort of the new ways that people like to eat out these days.
You know, the social aspect is very important. You know, at The Elm, we have it's a great dining bar. It's very comfortable. That is a good meeting place, whether to come have a drink or to have a full dinner or just have a snack. So it's definitely more sociable now than a tablecloth kind of sit down serious dinner.
So what do you what do you think is sort of that no one's talking about that's sort of next up in the dining world in New York City? Like, what do we have to look forward to?
I would say, you know, you're going to see a lot more smaller places opening, just simply more in neighborhoods that don't necessarily have, you know, good quality restaurants. You're going to see more and more of those. I think people's need and want to have, you know, good food at a reasonable price is, you know, more than ever. And like you were mentioning, Mark's new place, more different styles of cuisine, not the traditional restaurant style French Italian, that kind of thing. So a lot of more crossover, which is interesting and fun. New York City is that melting pot, which, you know, thank God we have the choice here. It's really fun. Yeah.
I mean, I'm feeling so lucky that I can sort of roll out of bed into, you know, a breakfast meeting. I mean, the breakfast is probably going to be one of the more it's such a luxury to have like multi-star breakfast, but just, you know, at affordable prices. Every entree is under $20. Let's go have a bit of an indulgence. Now you talk about sort of different kinds of cuisine, and we talked a little bit about Chinese food the other day when we were just you know, having breakfast. So what is it about Chinese food that sort of floats your boat and the boats of many others around the world?
You know, Chinese food is one of those cuisines that translates anywhere in the world. It really is. It's you go anywhere on the planet, there's a Chinese restaurant. And why is that? You tell me.
For me, it's comfort food. So again, I'm trying to pull myself up from it. For me, it's that every little kid around the world has their own version of dumplings, empanadas, you know, gnocchi, pierogies. That makes me very happy. But there's got to be something else. Like from your chefy perspective, there's got to be something.
Well, the fundamentals of whether it be Cantonese style or whether it be Sichuan style, there is a cross theme through all the different styles that has that umami effect, textural effect, depending on obviously what you like with, you know, whether it be a dumpling or whether it be noodles or rice. But it's one of those cuisines which translates very, very well. And being that it's been around longer than quite a few other cuisines, i.e. French cuisine, it's millennium.
And thank you for that.
Well, it's true. And it's really, I don't know, I just, there's something about it which I think is very, the depth and the knowledge and the history with it is very, very interesting.
And, well, you know, let's think, the Chinese food is made up of soy sauce, rice, a lot of pork.
Well, it depends where you come from.
Okay.
In the landmass that is China, there's, that's what makes it interesting. It's like America, you know, you have amazing seafood, amazing vegetables, amazing the heartland, amazing product from central of this country, and it's so varied. And the same thing is said for the landmass of China. The seafood, meat, vegetables, no matter where you go, there's something new to learn, and that's what makes it very interesting. You know, coming from England, obviously, there's a lot of influence there with, let's say, Hong Kong, which is Canton style, which I grew up with and fell in love with as a young lad, you know, growing up in London. And it really speaks to that sort of colonialism, I guess, for me, why I like the, you know, Indian food as well, obviously. And it's very close to my heart, yeah.
And I think I find it very interesting that, you know, I mean, in China, we Chinese people eat both noodles and rice, but the primary source of sustenance is rice. And, you know, as with wine and with terroir, you have the terroir of ingredients that go into a civilization and are able to keep a people alive. And maybe tell us a little bit about rice as an ingredient in Chinese food.
Well, I mean, how can billions of people be wrong, right? Rice is a sustenance for billions of people around the world. It's one of those basic building blocks of nutrition. It's a staple. As wheat is in Europe, Asia, there is rice. And the adaptability of rice, the variation on rice, alum grains of rice, the variance is huge. And that's what makes the building block of that cuisine very, very interesting. It is not it's not something which is, you know, three ingredients done over and over again. The variation of how to cook something's very simple that is a common ingredient is, that's the skill of a cuisine. So in French cuisine, wheat, you know, you have multitude of different items that have wheat, bread, pasta, etc. Rice is that element in Chinese cuisine and Asian cuisine in general, which makes it very interesting from a chefy point of view, as to learn the differences of what you can do.
I like that you just used the word chefy. I thought that was just something that I said.
Well, I'm just repeating what you said.
Oh, I love it. No, I'm feeling so brilliant right
just
now.
Just bringing it back to you.
Oh, thank you. Show, so thank you, Paul LeBrant.
Just paying a little homage to your show.
Yes, our show is Leyte's World of the Mouth on heritageradionetwork.org. And we're here with Paul LeBrant. you know, everyone's talking about Little Elm. It's about to happen in a couple weeks. I'm totally going to be like there first night. I'm super excited now. And then your other, you know, additional projects, Something Big in Manhattan. But maybe let's go more in the future. Is there a Chinese food? Would you cook Chinese food? Would you start a Chinese restaurant in your own style with your own signature?
Hell yeah.
You heard it here first. I'm going to be first in line there as well. I mean, how would you cook Chinese food? You know, we've got Mission Chinese. We've got, you know, I mean, it's not just Chinese, but David Chang, you know, starting a whole wave of using Asian ingredients in new ways. What would be your Chinese food?
And the very interesting thing is that each one of these people you mentioned has their own personal take on that cuisine. And that's what makes it fascinating, interesting, and really great. I was struck very, very strongly when I went on a trip to Hong Kong last year by the quality and the elegance of dining at a high-end dim sum style, which I've always thought is really interesting because it's little beautiful packets of deliciousness, multitudes of different styles, and that is very, very interesting. So how would I do it? I don't know. We'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
Something very Hong Kong style.
Okay. Well, I will encourage you to take that trip to Taiwan before you concept your Chinese food.
I would love to. If somebody out there would like to send me on a trip to Taiwan to do some R&D, I'd be very open and excited.
I'll be your note taker. Hey, hello, Taiwan government. Someone's out there listening to this because Taiwanese food is something else, which we'll talk about on another show, on another episode. So, I know we've really put our heads together about kind of the nature of a career and the many steps and sort of knowing yourself more and how much of a struggle that can be because, you know, as a chef, the work is art, but it's also a job. And for you, I know you find it more to be a job, but it's also that people who become chefs and great chefs, it's like this ability to do the same exacting, utterly excruciatingly detailed thing day in and day out for like 20 hours a day sometimes. What have you learned about yourself, you know, over the course of all of you, the restaurants that you've been a part of? And it's so sort of for the public to see in the documentary A Matter of Taste. What have you learned?
I've been standing, for better or worse, in a kitchen for 22 years now. So I could say probably tenacity is one of the key traits of any good person in this business. It's not a career that is ABC for a lot of chefs around the world. Things don't go according the way you'd like them to all the time. If you want to look at some examples, Thomas Keller, you look at him today, megastar, best of the best. Think back to the 80s, there was Raquel, etc. It didn't go the way I'm sure that he wanted it to, all the way he thought it would, but it led him to where he is today. So it's a tenacious character, I think, that keeps this business and keeps your customers happy because it's an ever-changing business. It's trends come and go. You can be a great chef, you can produce a great product, but the trend of the period might not be suited to what you do, so you have to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
You have to change or at least adapt yourself to what people want in a certain manner, but still keeping your own identity because that's who you are. So it's one of those things you have to have your eyes open and be very on top of what's coming next.
I could certainly relate with that. Yeah. The ups and downs of your journey in the documentary, because it is reinventing yourself and really managing your own expectations, managing, by the way, your ego as a young man and now as a little bit older man. And you know, I mean, like, the concept of ego, I have no idea how old you are, actually.
I'm 37.
Oh, okay. 37?
Yeah.
You are not 37.
Yeah, I am.
You
do not look older. Why, do I look older?
No, you look like you have a bit of a, you know, a youthful thing about you.
Hopefully that will keep me in saving grace when I get older.
Well, certainly the kitchen is an aging place. I mean, geez, hot, sweaty, and exhausting and high stress, and surprised you don't have more gray hairs. But ego is for me a very interesting thing. I recently, you know, as a young lady learning how to navigate the egos of old and young men, old and young women. Certainly in the restaurant world, the relationship between restaurateur and owner, and you know, you're both partners in different ways. I mean, what have you learned about your own ego and sort of, you know, how to manage your own ego and the egos of the people that you collaborate with?
Well, I mean, you can only manage your own ego. I mean, you can't manage someone else's. Look, I mean, you have to have somewhat of an ego in any profession where there's competition. The people that are doing whatever they do, whether it's you're an athlete or you're a financial whiz or you work in the restaurant, you have to have somewhat of an ego. Ego equals ambition, drive, and that's what people excel.
Mm-hmm.
But you should never let the ego overtake intellect. You should never let it overtake common sense. And that's the downfall, I suppose, of, I mean, I'm guilty of it. I mean, when I was younger, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it is necessary to a point, of course. And anybody that says the otherwise, not being honest, I suppose, with themselves. But yeah.
Ego of leaders is their downfall.
I mean, I think there's different, you know, there's ego of self, there's ego of your position, there's ego of a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a broad question. You know, the ego of oneself is different than, let's say, the ego of trying to do something that other for other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah. Of oneself versus the ego.
Well, you just said politicians, which is what I'm referring to. So the ego of, like, a political leader imposing their will for their own agenda, as opposed to the ego of somebody who is trying to push through something that they know will benefit the masses because they come from a place where they can see a bigger picture and the egos of others don't. Kind of what the Republicans and the Democrats go through every day. So that's sort of what I'm alluding to here. You know, that's something which has been going on for thousands and thousands of years and it won't stop. So,
well, I mean, you know, I think one of the things that really stands out when I'm just shooting a shit with you is that you're sort of, your job is to be to cook for people and make people happy, and you know, it's the customer or the guest is right, always right-ish. But you know, at the end of the day, that's just a job. So it seems like you're great at like leaving the kitchen and sort of having a whole life, being a whole human being outside of the kitchen.
Well, I mean, think about it this way. You know, if tomorrow you couldn't do what you do, what happens if tomorrow you couldn't talk or listen? And your job is now to be on the radio, what would you do? Does your job define who you are as a person? In some ways, yes, but you are the person. So for me, if tomorrow, God forbid, you know, I couldn't walk or I lost my sense of taste or something that is critical in what I do, would that define me and I would just stop doing being who I am? No,
mm-hmm.
I'm still me. And I wouldn't have other interests outside of what I do to be able to be Paul Liebrandt rather than saying I am the kitchen and that's all I do. And, you know, maybe when I was younger, more like that. But when you get a little older, you realize that, you know, it's a business. It's a job. That's great. It mm-hmm. does define you. Sure. And it is, it's a vocation. But, you know, I had, for example, one of my team at one of my previous restaurants went on holiday,
mm-hmm.
shattered the left foot by diving off a boat, and went to the doctor and was told, this is a 23-year-old young person, was told they're going to have to be in traction for the next 4 months and they should find another career because they won't be able to stand on their feet indefinitely like you do in a kitchen for a 23-year-old. So that illustrates and punctuates exactly, I feel, what I'm trying to say, is that the career, the job for them, they have to really a life decision of what they want to do. Thank God it happened when this person was young, mm-hmm. rather than in their 40s, for example, where it'd be more difficult to change. But I think that that's something which most of us don't think about, maybe.
Yeah. And speaking of your team, a great chef, a great leader is somebody who empowers the people on their team,
mm-hmm.
And hires great people. And by the way, behind every great man, there's a great woman. Behind every great woman, there's a great man. So what is it like to work and live with, 24/7 with your girlfriend and now wife of many years, the amazing Arlene? How do you guys do it? I know a lot of people who wouldn't be able to stand their spouses for, like, day in and day out.
Like I said, tenacity, I think, is the word.
Yeah. Well, there were some really sweet moments in the documentary. I mean, I ask this question to everyone I meet. It's like I'm into like love and people finding people that they enjoy. And what was like the thing when you guys first met? Both working in the same restaurant. What was the thing that sort of stood out about this lady?
Well, she's just Arlene.
She would say the same thing about you, by the way. Paul.
We have a very private life.
And yeah.
Yes, I know it was on camera, but she's Arlene. She is wonderful in every way possible. Oh. And what can I say? I mean, she is who she is. I am who I am. And like a little jigsaw puzzle, I guess we fit. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I do love that there's that mutual respect and that you two are able to do great things together. I have to ask this because we have a little bit of time left. I know we were nerding out about the Cronut earlier this week, and that's on the tip of everyone's tongues. To me, Dominique Ansel is one of the most talented pastry chefs out there. But what I'm really fascinated by is not by like the Cronut and how it tastes and whether it's good or not and what else is there out there that is, renditions of it and where can you get something that's similar, sort of like, to me, that's like, who cares? I've had many of his other pastries. They're all excellent. But I haven't had a Cronut yet, and neither have you. What is the role the Cronut plays in American food culture? Like, why is it a big deal?
I think it's maybe a bit too soon to say it plays a role in American food culture because
New York food culture.
It hasn't been around that long.
Got it.
Right. First and foremost, I must admit I haven't had one, so I can't really speak with authority on this. I know Dominique, amazing pastry chef. I love what he does. He's one of the best guys out there. He really is. I think, a comparison would be something like what Pierre Hermé did with the macaroon when he left Fauchon and he went to La Dorée, and he relaunched in many ways the way people approach and make macaroon, which was a French, I guess, cronut of its day when it was invented in the 1800s. And I think that, that's basically maybe the macaroon of our time. I don't know. I couldn't comment any more than that, but I think it's something which everybody can gravitate towards, too. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what a donut is and a croissant, and it's a genius move to put it together and the catchy name, and it is. It's great. It's a catchy name.
And right.
It's something that everybody can gravitate towards. It's an affordable luxury. Pastry is an affordable luxury.
Which is something that the French know so well. Kids have pain au chocolat, and our kids have, cereal. as much as I love cereal. Certainly the name is brilliant. I commend Dominique. It wouldn't have been quite as good as a dosant. I think Cronut is better than dosant. So the other day, you got an email, Nine Inch Nails is playing in London, and it's sold out. What else are you listening to at home and when you're cooking?
At home and when I'm cooking. Well, I don't listen to anything when I'm cooking.
Okay. Cooking at home. How about that? That's a totally different animal.
Well, I don't cook at home.
Yeah, that's not what the documentary showed.
Yeah, okay. That was like maybe 8 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't really cook at home because I cook all day.
Absolutely.
So. What music am I listening to? Right now, let me see. I was actually listening to, there's a DJ collective out of Holland called Black Sun Empire, which I was listening to. Very good.
Black Sun Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And you're loving that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go get that on my Spotify.
Cool.
Thank
Great.
You so much,
My
Paul.
Pleasure.
We're going to break now, and just for a second, we're going to go on to Wind Down. Let's Wind Down. You're on heritageradionetwork.org with Leyte Su, Leyte's World of Mouth. Just had Paul LeBrant. I can say his last name correctly, finally. That was really fun. I hope you had fun. We're going to do a little bit of wind down now. Here's what I obsess a little bit about, something wine-related that I think about all the time. So I want to give you a mission. Everyone out there, you know that feeling when you get really insecure and you feel kind of funny and you feel like you're dumb and, you know, you feel like you don't, you know every single wine on the wine list. When you walk into a wine store, when you walk into a restaurant, well, I want to empower you to, the next time you look at a wine list and you're baffled, to be not afraid to ask questions and let the sommelier, let the wine store owner, the wine store employee help you out. Because, you know, I think Eric Asimov talks about this in his book, and it's something that I care a lot about, is that there is no reason to let wine be this thing that's like scary and weird. And it, by the way, doesn't have to be expensive. There's really, really good Vino Verde for $10 a bottle that you can have and you can drink every single day. I want you to squash that insecurity and think, well, it's my job to be a neuroscientist. It's my job to be an astrophysicist. It's my job to be an accountant, to be an investment banker, to be a doctor, a lawyer. It's my job to be a freelance writer. It's my job to do everything but be a sommelier or be a wine store, you know, bear. So I'm a bear, they're bears, and we all have our jobs that we do and that we're good at. And by the way, those sommeliers, they're staring at the same wine list day in and day out. It's their job to help you. So take away your insecurity, be comfortable with asking questions and learning. Don't say, oh, I love wine, but I don't know anything about it. Because by the way, you do. You know what you like. You know what tastes good to you and what doesn't, and it's not right or wrong. And yeah, that's my wine, you know, food for thought of the day. Go forth and let me know what you think. Ciao for now. Thanks for listening. HeritageRadioNetwork.org, Leyte's World of Mouth.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.